Welcome everybody to the Strength and Skills Podcast. This is your host, Nick Tibuzek, and with me, the question asking legend himself. I think the strongest puller and dipper in the world right now. I think I always say his name wrong because I always say it's Matthew, but I think it's the wrong way. Please tell us your name.
Well, actually, my name in Russian, as it's supposed to be, sounds Matvey Zlatoverkhovnikov.
How?
Yeah, a little. But I just chose Matthew Zlat as a nickname that is a little bit easier to pronounce and to understand for non-Russian citizens. So Matthew is fine too.
Perfect. I knew I was wrong with that one, but I'm just not able to say it the right way. So for those who maybe don't know you, I think it's very important to bring up why this guy is in here. From my opinion right now, I don't see anyone in the world who's stronger in pulling and dipping right now. Maybe in pulling, because there's one Russian guy.
I'm trying to find a comfortable setup here, but I'm failing miserably right now. So.
It's all good. your highest dip ever was 195 kg.
Yeah, 195. Yeah.
What was your highest pull?
125.
It was, I think, at the competition of Adam Raw. Am I right?
No. The pull up at CWWB was 120, but 125 was to like just chin to bar. But in the competition, it was 120 chin over the bar. So actually, 120 is a little bit better result for me.
Yes, it was
done in competition with judging everything. So I think that 120 is my best result in pulling.
So I think that's reason enough to have that guy in here. And for you listeners, I think it would be very interesting for you to hear this guy's story. So Matthew, please let us know, where are you from? How old are you? When did you start training? The whole complete story. Give us a little background.
Well, I am 21 today. And I started my training all the way back in 2012, actually, when I just tried maximum push-ups one morning and I thought, nah, that is not going to cut it. I need to do more. I need to get stronger. And around a year passed and I just did push-ups every morning. Like from 12 to 13 years old, I just did push-ups every morning. And that was kind of the start. But it got serious when at 13 years old I got into a gym, and I was given to a coach, actually. Like for the next 7 or 8 months I had a coach, and he saw potential in me. Like it was supposed to be like just something like corrective physical culture, so nothing hard, just basically strengthening of your overall condition. But yeah. The coach saw potential in me, and I didn't notice how I started training for 3 hours, three times a week. Like benching, squatting, deadlifting. I did the big three back then. I also did curls. Like it was a regular gym split, like a bro split, you may call that.
Yeah.
And at that age, I was around 70 to 74 kilos body weight already at 13 years old. And my best bench was 105 kilos and 80 kilos for 8 reps. My best squats were 70 for 10 reps. And my best deadlift was around 80 or 85 for 10 reps as well after squats.
Okay. That's crazy already. Well, where did we go from there? How came you started doing all the calisthenics stuff? I mean,
well,
you are living in... The German word for that would be Krim, but you say Crimea?
Well, it's Krim in Russian, so I guess the German word is a little bit closer to the original than the English one, so you can use Krim if you want.
Yeah. So you're living there, and like every Western European, I think people from Russia and Ukraine are crazy as fuck. So how did that go from just this classic gym approach into what you did afterwards? Because I have seen videos of you doing stuff on the rings, one-arm pull-ups, like Iron Cross and all that stuff.
Well, the transition was actually forced, so to say, because at some point in my gym training, I had, I don't know how it's called, and this is not like a stroke, but I had a period where my blood pressure was extremely high for that age, and I had to stop training a little.
Okay.
And at that time, I thought that gym loads you up with pressure, like, it enforces your arterial pressure to...
Yeah.
So I thought that the gym was influencing it more than calisthenics. So I tried calisthenics, and actually my mom was trying to, like, not my mom, but my parents basically were trying to stop me from training. But they believed that calisthenics is a little bit easier on the heart. So I used that to actually continue training. So it was like a forced change of pace.
All right. And how came that you just went into all these hard movements? Was it easy for you to get all that stuff? Where did you start at that point? How many pull-ups and all that stuff?
Well, actually, pull-ups, I found them quite hard in my childhood. And dips, when I first tried them, I only got 2 reps. It was crazy for me. Like, I wasn't the best at school in pull-ups or dips. Like, I was never that when I didn't train. Well, while people who didn't train at all, pull-ups and dips got like 10 reps of each. And I had like 2 dips and 7 or even 5 pull-ups when I didn't train that. So pull-ups were never easy for me at that point. But I started training little by little at that gym experience. It got me stronger for the pull-ups. So when I tried increasing my reps, it went quite easily from 10 to 15 to 20-something.
Yeah.
And it was quite easy. Then when I had like 20-something pull-ups, I started trying one-arm pull-ups. And to my surprise, I got it after a couple of days of attempts.
Yeah.
Like, it was quite easy. Like, one day we with the guys just started playing ladder. Like, one guy does one pull-up, you all do one pull-up, then 2, 3, and so on, like regular games in Russia. And I had my left shoulder a little bit injured, so I didn't feel like continuing. Instead, I tried doing a one-arm pull-up on the right, and I succeeded.
Oopsie.
I was 14 at that time.
That's crazy. What was your weight at that point?
70 something, I think 72 or 73 kilos.
Okay.
I was a big guy in childhood, like not big in terms of fat, but in actual development. So my body was a little bit more developed than my, like, compared to my age.
That's crazy. All right. When did you actually start doing the specializing? I mean, afterwards, you probably started doing all the ring stuff then. And when did you start with the specializing?
Well, it actually was a curious journey as well, because it took me around 1.5 years to go from this random calisthenics to specialized pull-ups and dips. And it was interesting as well, because I learned quite a lot of calisthenics stuff, by the way. At first, I tried to carry on with the programming of my coach from the gym, just using calisthenics for that. So I did a basic bro split for the muscles, just the calisthenics way of it. Like, so one day I did pull-ups, curls, one-arm pull-ups, front lever training, all that stuff. The second day was pushing, and the third day was legs and shoulders.
That's good.
So I did legs, yes. I did squats, I did pistol squats back then. But in the summer of 2015, I tried competing in freestyle comps. And actually succeeded to some point, got some third, second places. And at that point, I also learned some really cool elements that mattered to me. Like, I learned the one-arm front lever, quite bad form. I did a one-arm pull-up with 16 kilos with a kettlebell. I started doing one finger, one arm pull-ups, and at some pump, I got psyched up a little and tried pulling one finger, one arm pull-up, like 16 kilos, and I actually succeeded in that.
Whoa.
To my surprise. Already at 15, I was the second person in the world to do that.
Crazy.
And this hit me. This hit me that I can do wonderful things if I want. I understood that at that point. And then after, I tried a weighted competition at like a festival of extreme sports on Tarkhankut in Krim.
And I think they it's had very like, well known. That's in Ukraine, isn't it?
Tarkhankut is Krim. It's also Krim, but the northern part. I live in the southern part.
Okay. Okay. That's crazy.
And I just decided to get ready for the next year and to stop doing all the elements for this period of time and just focus on the basics, dips and pulls. No, also one-arm pull-ups because I love them so much and it was just my movement. And it still is, as I will tell you a little bit later. But at that point, I tried specialization and it worked.
All right.
And actually, it was an endurance competition I was preparing for. But at some point, I decided to build a strength base to specialize in endurance later on to have like something to build up from. But I got so interested in building strength that it slowly turned into just street lifting.
How strong have you been at that point? Did you do the competition in the end?
Yes, I did, but I failed miserably due to the lack of preparation. So,
all right.
My first competition history was very bad. That's okay. Why I didn't compete for years after that. Okay. But at 15, I already had, like, at early 15, like, a month or two after my birthday, I already had 90 kilo dips for reps, 50 kilo pull-ups for 5 or 6 reps, and one-arm pull-ups like for 7 or 8 reps on the left arm, and plus 16, almost 2 reps I had.
That's crazy. It's really crazy. And you have been pretty strong in one-arm pull-ups, but not so strong in normal pull-ups in comparison.
Yeah, the difference was quite big actually, because and even at some point I stopped training regular pull-ups at all in favor of one-arm pull-ups and front lever, because I really wanted that one-arm front lever and front lever pull-ups.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. All right. And so in 2017 you started completely specializing, is that right?
No, I already started doing just 3 movements in 2015.
Okay.
Or if you mean completely specializing just 2 movements, it was in 2019, actually. Because from 15 to 18, I did also handstand push-ups, I did one-arm pull-ups, I did front lever training, like on and off. And it didn't really bother me. It was actually going quite well with these 2 main movements of pull-ups and dips.
Yes. Okay. And you already had a fixed structure during that time. You already have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Because I started experimenting with structures like all the way back, actually. Even when I started training with a coach in 2013, I had a fixed structure of that split. Like the first day was a bench press and biceps. The second day was pulling and triceps, and the third day was legs and shoulders. And I carried on with it for like a year until I started to experiment with the pulling and pushing every single training 3 times a week. And from that point I understood that for me splitting just doesn't work. Like pulling and pushing go together better than they do one by one.
Yeah, for you, of course. Okay. Yeah. Okay, and you still train 3 days a week?
Yes, right now I do train 3 days a week. Although there have been quite bizarre experiments with my coach that I got like not so long ago. And you probably saw the stories on Instagram. I trained like a crazy madman several times a day, like 5 or 6 days a week. It was his plan.
Okay. Well, okay. So, Why 3 days a week? Was that something that you took from the beginning and you never changed it? Or did you just see that? Did you try several days, or how did you know that this is the best for you?
Well, at first it was just the basic split, but then I tried like pushing and pulling together and understood, like at first I had doubts that I would recover, like only one rest day between days, but I did recover and it worked quite well. And then it worked so well that I didn't actually need to change anything.
Yeah.
And only then I started to try to train like 4 times a week, 1 week, 2 times a week, another week. These experiments started only in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually took quite a long time to get it working, but I did. I did get it working.
That's super interesting, because a lot of people always think you have to train like 6 or 7 days a week, and you're definitely the example. Less is more.
Yeah. But you know that I specialize, and like if you train 6 or 7 days a week, you have to split your training wisely so that while one movement recovers, you can train another one.
Yeah.
So this fatigue management needs to be on a pretty high level. But when you train only two movements, then it's extremely hard to do that. And actually, I, with my coach, we managed to do that like in 2021. But that's a story for a little bit later when we discuss current situation.
When I look into your videos right now, you're never maxing out. But I know from conversations before, you told me in the beginning you maxed out very often. When did that change and why?
Well, in 2015, I maxed out. Actually, it was switched like from random maxing out to a structured program. But the program actually allowed for maxing out, not like every session, but you have a scheme. And you constantly add weight to it and you push it until you start maxing out. That's the way I did that. And like it can happen to this point in time. Like I can have a session where I hit failure, but I try to avoid that and actually hit the sweet spot between like RPE 10 and failure. So this is the hardest set that I will do. RPE 10, but not failure. Yeah. This is like perfect. Like you need to know where to stop.
Yeah. All right. And this is mostly done pretty auto-regulated by how you feel.
Not really auto-regulated. It's in the scheme. It's
okay.
Like written in the scheme.
Yeah. I like that. That's pretty cool. Okay. So now we know a little bit of your training background. Now we can ask you the most important question.
Yeah.
Are you on roids?
No, I'm not.
We have to ask that question because everybody on the internet always tells, yeah, he must be on roids. And I was always like, I don't think so. He just trains a little smarter than the rest and he has pretty good genetics. We have to...
Well, I don't know about genetics. I actually heard an opinion that I managed to change or alter my genetics by training hard even before puberty hit. So I had a chance to modify my body this way. There is this opinion and I really like that. But overall, I don't think I have the best genetics. Like for sure, I know people who have genetics better than mine. I know at least like 3 or 4 people this like this.
Well, hopefully we see them in the world. I would love to see that.
They just don't train. Like they are built well, they have a great body structure, they have the natural tendency to gain muscle, but they just don't train. It's not their thing.
That's so sad. Maybe it's because you guys living in Ukraine, that's close to Chernobyl, and that's probably the reason for that.
Well, Chernobyl is actually the north of Ukraine, so like Moscow is around the same distance from Chernobyl that I am.
That explains why the Russians are like that too. All right. So nowadays you also still train 3 days. How long do your sessions go?
Well, I like to take a big rest between sessions, between sets, so up to 4 hours sometimes.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy. How many exercises are you doing? Are you doing a lot of volume?
Not that much, actually. I sometimes, like right now, my structure of the training is pull, push, pull. So pull-up variation number one, then dips, and pull-up variation number two.
Okay. And you're switching up in between pull-ups and chin-ups, or what is the variation?
Yeah. Like? Yeah, my main variations right now are locked chin-ups, and also I'm trying to develop locked pull-ups. And to like excite my nervous system before that, I do normal variations with heavy weight.
Okay. All right, that's super interesting. All right, so after years of not getting coached after 2013, you decided to get a coach in 2021. What was the reason for that?
Well, it was in the army, in the second half of my service already, when I got finally to a military camp with a great gym. Like mm-hmm. It was a great gym. I bought the equipment I needed to train. I finally got everything, and I started to like prioritize dips again, because I had a period before that I did pulls mostly, and it really paid off. I got a 107 kilos locked chin up, because it's such a big result, because like a year ago, I couldn't lock 50 kilos on a chin up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like after training locked for less than a year, I overcome 100 kilos in a competition. It was a big thing for me, but after I switched to dips, I got from 175 to 190 dip in 4 weeks. In 4 weeks, and then I kind of stalled out. And I had this contact, a person who knows strength training like no other person in the world I know right now. His name is Dmitry Golovinsky. He is an elite bench presser, the holder of official Ukraine record of 305 kilos bench press.
Yeah.
He also has the second strict curl in the world at 106 kilos official.
Wow.
And he says that he did all that with lower than average genetics, worse than average genetics, because he was a sick boy when he was young. He has problems with the digestive system, and he still managed to pull off such extreme results with all that.
Yeah.
And it was all because he's a great Methodist. Like, mm-hmm. And also I watched his athletes, I watched him train, and I have never seen anything like that. Like what his athletes and him do, it's completely unique. And I wanted to understand what lies behind that method.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted him, and we are quite in good relations. So he answered easily. And I asked him, can you coach me for quite a bit so I can understand your method? And he said, yes.
That's cool. That's cool. And now you're using that for your pulls?
Huh?
Now you're using that for your pulls?
No. Because this method, actually, my priorities were as such. Dips pushed to the maximum, pulls maintained. Maintained as a secondary exercise, you don't like. I didn't even have to progress, and it was a bad decision because my pulls degraded a lot during that time period. Because his method, like, I don't know whether it was just because I said to maintain pulls or because my pulls didn't react quite well to the method, but they degraded a lot, and I had to bring them back up after that. But dips actually started going a little bit up, but after 4 months I had no PRs at all.
Okay.
Like my technique improved, my speed on extreme weights like 185, 175 were moving much better than they used to be, but 190 was still the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I couldn't do 195, and I just slowed down. And the method actually was quite extreme because it was very low volume per session, quite high intensity, but the sessions were abundant. in the week, because sometimes I had 12 deep sessions a week. Imagine that.
How?
Two times a day, 6 days a week. Two times a day, 6 days a week. And out of them, like six could have been up to 150 or more. At some point, I had a week where I did like got up to 180 kilos dips for several singles, three times a week.
But at least 180 are pretty safe now.
Yeah, like they're perfectly safe. Well, I found out that my work capacity is quite a bit higher than I anticipated it to be.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I actually managed to like deal quite well with this frequency and intensity. He said that this method of his was based on the Bulgarian training method.
Yeah, sounds like that.
Of Abadzhiev, yes. It was a modified Bulgarian system.
Yeah.
For elite level athletes, because he said in his own live stream that don't try to copy his training right now, because he is training in an elite way that only he can manage.
That's something before the listener starts into, oh, Bulgarian training. Guys, Bulgarian training was made for Olympic weightlifters who were really stuffed with roids. And they did nothing else but training. They were locked into a house. Some of them were brought out of jail because they were just strong and they had to win the Olympics. So all they did was training. So for them was the system made. So that's... Nothing for the normal people.
He based that on, like, he called these little training sessions, he called them attacks. So, and he said that Bulgarian trainees had like from 5 to 8 attacks per day. I had 2 attacks per day.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's completely crazy. So at least you learned something out of that.
And of course I did. I learned a lot from him. He is a great man and an extremely good Methodist. I still think he's the best. It's just that this particular method didn't work for me quite well.
Yeah.
And I think that's because I actually made myself used to my training methods. So when something completely new was introduced, my body didn't know how to react to that. Yeah. So that's my expectation.
Do you think it would have taken more time?
Well, I don't know. Maybe like, and I'm quite sure actually that given enough time, like a couple of years, he would have found the right approach for me. But usually if I try a method and it doesn't click in 2 or 3 months, then it's not working.
Okay.
If I try something that will actually work, it usually, like, I know that from like the first month, it just clicks and I feel great. Mm-hmm. It didn't click with him.
Okay. So coming from there, you are probably working on the next records for pulling and dipping. And I think to get into that topic, We can start off with let's start off with the pulling. What are your actually 3 top tips for a strong pull?
Well, I would have just one tip. Just fucking pull and don't overthink it. That's the thing that worked for me.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of tips like arch your back, squeeze, like, squeeze your shoulder blades, retract, depress. Like, I never focused on that. It may be important for some people to understand this technique or to prevent injury, like you said in the pull talk, but for me, it never worked. I just found the most intuitive technique and pulled. Mm-hmm. And this was the way I could produce the maximum output of the force.
Yeah. But maximum force output. I also know that you very often are... This may sound for some people like he's just hanging there and pulling, but I know that you also are into some details. Like we talked about the stuff in the chin-ups, where you grip, how you grip it, and all that stuff. Do you have some more insights into that?
Well, that's called optimization, but it's quite personal because mm-hmm. some people, like I've seen your athlete, Rado has like a crazy chin-up mobility. So his wrist feels very natural in place. So I look at him and like, how does he do that? Because my wrist just doesn't allow that.
Yeah.
And for this specific reason, I have to adapt. Like the thing that Nick talks right now was like this thing where you like grip like this and not like this. Like not, you don't use a full grip. Instead, you like put all of your grip strength into these three fingers, and these are quite relaxed.
Yeah,
this is done to like to improve the wrist mobility on the top.
Yeah,
it allows me to lock much better.
Yeah,
and I think that's the tip.
I think that's the stuff that a lot of people are waiting for, because everybody knows. Yeah, let's get some structure into training. Let's get into some technical stuff. But all these small little details, I think they matter a lot, especially when you specialize into that stuff. I mean, you also changed pretty much for a lot of people how they dip. That's pretty interesting because you started using the long rope. And nobody did that before, and you did it, and it was pretty much the smartest move ever. Just a longer rope, and that's it. And when you look into it, it makes so much sense. This is why I'm asking for stuff like that, because I think there are some of these small little detail tips which can have such a big impact on it. This is actually what I'm waiting for. Are you hanging your weight in the poles also very low?
Well, not really. Actually, I tried to optimize it for poles as well, and I came to the conclusion that it doesn't really matter as long as it's not too high or not too low, because the long rope doesn't quite work for poles for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels the best when the plates hang around between your knees and your feet. Like in the calf area, but not as low as on dips. On dips, we'll discuss that later, but on pulls, it doesn't really matter as long as it is, as long as it is comfortable.
Yeah. I like that. So that's also a very important one, because I learned that the same way. I would say for the muscle ups, it's even different. But for the pull ups, it's like that. And today we're going to talk about pull and dip. Would you say there's a big difference in pulling between chin-ups and pull-ups?
It's substantial. Substantial. You can definitely pull more weight on the chin-up.
Yeah.
If we don't talk about locked stuff, the locked stuff is even more different, because you can't compare locked chin-ups and locked pull-ups.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because for me, the difference between them is like 30 kilos or something.
Okay, but with a locked chin-up, you probably can move more?
Yes, of course. And actually, I didn't show a big PR in chin-ups so far, because I never really had time to focus on just heavy chin-ups without the lock. But I think it's possible with a 125 pull, your chin-up should be around 135 to 140 kilos if you adjust the technique and train it as much as you did pull-ups.
Yeah. Would you say they complement each other?
I would say that yes, they do. But if you want to get better at one thing, you should train that one thing. And don't expect to improve your pull-ups drastically with doing chin-ups. It doesn't work.
Yeah. But you would say you can use the chin-up as an assistance exercise?
Yes, but I prefer using like for regular pull-ups, I prefer using locked chin-ups as assistance and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. That's super interesting. So with the locked, you mean holding on top of the bar?
Yes. This is the competition form here in Russia.
Yeah.
So I have to do locked chin-ups because that's what counts here. Like the regular form of pull-ups, chin-ups doesn't count here. You have to pull all the way up until the bar is under your chin and then hold it. But you are allowed to use your chin as like an assistance
yeah
thing. So you can actually grip the bar with your chin. That's allowed. And I think that's fair, because to grip the bar with your chin, you have to at least pull all the way here.
Yeah,
to
of use course. That. Of course.
So it's fair. It's fair. It's not cheating, as some people in the comments say.
You will always have people in the comments, you know, talk shit. It's always
that's true. That's true. That's true.
Okay. All right. So let's dive into dips. I know that is your most favorite thing.
Yeah, but we didn't discuss locked stuff quite as well, because found one interesting thing about locked stuff that helped me eliminate my leg movement that was bugging me for the longest time. Mm-hmm. I found that when I do locked, my legs turn off. Like, I don't jerk my legs at all when I do locked stuff, just because, like, it's something that happens naturally without me thinking about it. So I put my emphasis on locked stuff so much right now to eliminate the legs at all. And it's actually happening. Soon, all of my pull-ups and chin-ups will be super clean. I'm working on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because people are always like, yeah, but you see that? There was a little leg movement because the knee was bending a bit.
Yeah. Even if the leg is bending on the locked stuff, like on the locked pull-up or the locked chin-up, it just bends and doesn't straighten again at the top. So like there is absolutely no jerking. And this is what I found really comfortable and interesting and useful in locked work. So right now, the locked work is like my primary goal. And after I pull off a high locked number, I'll probably switch to regular chin-ups to try to break through that 125 barrier.
Yeah. Because you still have to do the 140.
Yeah. I want to do 120 locked first.
Yeah.
And I think that's coming quite soon, actually, because when I did 107.5 in the competition, I felt like it was far from the limit.
Mm-hmm.
And I did locked stuff seriously for around three to four months at that point. I felt like there is a lot of potential to explore. And right now, this is what I will do. I will explore the potential of the locked chin-up.
Yeah, I like that. Are you ever going into failure with that?
Well, actually, for me, failure on the locked chin-up is quite far from actually hitting muscular failure, because I have to be explosive with the locked work, because I have no strength in the upper range of motion. Like from here to here, I cannot pull with strength. So what I do is I explode up and just catch myself with my chin. That's what I do. And you fail a rep this way when you are not as explosive anymore. So you will still pull to around this height and just slide out.
Yeah,
this is not really a muscular failure, but instead like a technical failure. So it's quite hard to hit actual muscular failure with locked stuff.
Yeah. Do you use special assistance or accessory work for that?
No, this is one of my main points of training, actually, to get better at the stuff you do. Do the stuff you do. And no, like, isolations, no partials, no assistance. I don't use assistance at all. This is my approach.
Okay. So probably a training session of you doing pulling is like you do your chin-ups. And how does a training session like that look like?
Like warm-ups, like regular full body warm-up.
Mm-hmm.
Then warm-up sets until you hit your straight sets, like the working sets. You do the working sets and basically you're done with your pulling number one. Then you do dips and then you do your pulling number two the same way.
So are we talking about that's one session? Okay, the connection is a little bit poor now. Let's see where it goes. Let me know when you're back.
No.
Maybe you just turn off the video, then we have the sound back.
Our connection got in. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, definitely. Connection is a little bit poor right now. So if you turn off the video and keep the sound, then probably the sound will work. Here we are back. You have to put on the sound. Yeah.
Do you hear me now?
Yes, absolutely, I do.
Okay, great. Some connection problems. Maybe because of the weak Wi-Fi or something like that.
All right. For the pulling session, so you have like a top set maybe and some backups?
No, I don't use the structure of top set backoffs. Actually, I learned from Dmitry this thing from Russian weightlifting, or I don't know where he found that, but it's extremely logical for me, is that during a session, you must not lower the weight, never. So, and this goes against this top set backoff rules, because you have to only go up in weight, because this way the session is more specific to the actual competition process and strength building. So if you want to do a top set, like a top single, you would do your work sets first, and then after that you do a top single.
Mm-hmm. So this you have like I don't know, four sets of triples and afterwards a single.
Not really, because also one of his rules is that you don't like it can be rarely avoided, but usually is you don't lift a weight in one set. So you have to have at least two singles. Usually it was done something like three sets of three and then three singles, or two sets of two and two singles, or two sets of two, then two singles, then two heavier singles.
Okay.
These were the standard structures in his training.
Okay.
And I use that to this day. So, and this like I switched up my classic scheme. I used, like, back in the past I used a 3x3 followed by 3x5, but right now I do first I do 3x5 and then 3x3.
Okay. And when you did that, like, I don't know, six sets in total, then you're done with training completely.
Well, for example, my Monday session right now looks like this. Lock chin ups, three sets of five, then three sets of three, 10 kilos heavier. Then the same goes for dips. And then I have potentiation pull ups, like maintenance work with no lock, 3x3, and then three singles. And that's the session. So 3x5, 3x3 chin ups, 3x5, 3x3 dips, 3x3, 3x1 pull ups.
Okay.
And that's the session.
Okay. That's super interesting. I like that. I'm absolutely always interested in seeing how many methods there are, because I've never done that method and I've never seen someone doing that method. And this is why this is so super interesting. And
yeah, there are a lot of gems hidden in strength training. You just have to find them.
Yeah.
And I keep finding them to this day, and it's super interesting.
Absolutely. So when you have a dipping day, you probably start off with the dips and have the pulling after.
Well, I don't have dipping days. Like right now, all of my sessions follow the same pattern.
Exactly the same.
Yes, exactly the same of push, like pull, push, pull.
Okay. This,
right now, everything is built that way.
Okay. Okay.
When I have dips in priority, I will have just push and pull. No second push. Because what I found for myself after all these years is that I can handle much more pulling than pushing.
Yeah. That's something I've seen with a lot of people. Most people can handle more pulling than pushing, actually. That's something I can also say.
And this structure is not random either, because I'm used to pull, push, pull. For many years, I did that with one arm pull-ups being the first pull.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, this scheme is supernatural for me, and it's very comfortable. Although dips suffer a little from that because of the fatigue from the first pull, because one arm pull-ups used to be not that fatiguing, because I usually did them for singles, and I was quite fresh when I got to the dips. But right now, I feel a little bit of fatigue on my dips, but also dips feel quite safe because I am pretty warm and ready after the first pull. So okay. It feels natural for me, like two pulls and one push. Okay. It's great.
Do you have a special warm-up for your training? Especially when you you're moving so heavy weights, do you have something special?
Yeah, for every single that big action.
So right now,
here we go again.
Yeah, the connection is a little bit, but it's getting better with the sound. You just need to talk. Can you hear me? Yeah, I think there was a sound.
We need to reconnect. This is bad.
The sound is there. You just turn off the video. You can do that. Sound is there. So you have to just to switch on the sound now?
Okay, yeah. We're back. We're back.
All right. So going back to the warm-up, you probably do some specialized warm-up stuff, and you said you're doing some full body stuff. Are you doing something else?
So I usually just warm up my shoulders, elbows, and wrists.
Yeah.
And also do one or two specific exercises for the movement that comes after that specific warm-up. So for pull-ups or chin-ups, this may be bicep curls with an empty barbell or a one-arm row focused on the lats and on the lock right here, because with the one-arm row, you can really bring that wrist all the way to your chest. And this warms you up extremely well. And for dips, I have all kinds of crossover flies, you may call them.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, when you warm up specifically the area in the chest that is working the most, and also it gets the most soreness, like this point.
Yeah. The upper part of the chest.
Yeah.
It's super.
So I do like these flies, and then also something like the iron cross flies, but in a crossover with the pulleys. And it warms me up quite well.
That's super interesting. So when it comes to the dips.
yes, dips.
Do you use any assistance there?
No. Like for dips, it's an even bigger topic than for pulls. For dips, there is no assistance required for me and for most people that I train with. It's just not required.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can use like an increase in bench strength for the dips, but I never found it effective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as Dmitry said once, you can build a big tricep with dips, but you can never build a big dip with training triceps.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's super interesting. Okay. All right. When we go into dipping, would you say you profit from what you did before, all the years before, with all the handstand push-ups and all that stuff?
Well, all those years I also did dips. So yeah. I guess the most progress still comes from the dips.
Yeah.
But I guess the handstand push-ups helped a little bit with the development of the shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed me to better my body position in the dip, because I dip with the shoulders, not with the chest or with the triceps. Like, the thing that I control the most are the shoulders, and that what gets the most soreness is the upper chest and the upper, like the front delt.
Mm-hmm.
These are the places that get the most amount of fatigue after a heavy dip session for me.
Yeah. I'm asking that because I want people to understand that you had a very strong base when you went into this specialization. And
yes, I did have that strong. Yes, having a strong base is important for specializing well.
Mm-hmm. Because I remember.
But also basic exercises like the dip are extremely well. Like, they build this base extremely well by themselves.
Yeah.
So it can be done with just basics.
Yeah.
And also, there is an interesting fact about the dip. And did you know that it actually is the more basic exercise than the bench press? Like, yeah, it involves more muscle mass. And actually, the strength produced in the downward push is more than in the horizontal push. And it actually is stated in some books of anatomy and like biomechanics, or how it's called in English. But it is stated that we humans can produce the most force in the downward pushing compared to horizontal or upward pushing. So dip is the most basic pushing exercise for the upper body.
Yeah, it makes absolutely sense. This is you can see that when you have a negative bench pressing, you know, when the bench is a little bit more in a negative way, people are stronger there. And that's completely natural, because the triceps can work as usual, but the lower part of the chest can work even better. And this is actually to get that into the mind. When you look at that, it biomechanically, it's just the strongest bench that you can actually have usually. And this is a more downward pushing. And this is where this comes from. And this is where you see that this is actually the strongest, maybe like horizontal style of pushing. And the only thing that I would say is why a dip is a little bit harder for some people, because they have to stabilize the shoulder girdle so much more.
Yes. And that's why you don't see elite benchers come into the dip quite as often.
Yeah.
And show, but it happens. Like, did you see that guy who had like 300 something bench press, and he tried dipping and like tried one rep max dipping, and he got a 175 dip?
But that's impressive.
That's impressive. But actually, I looked up his story, and he actually did train dips for years before that. So
yeah,
it wasn't really that impressive, but still there are like people. I know personally a guy who had like 200 kilos bench, and he tried dips for the first time. He tried weighted dips, and he got a 150 kilo dip. And now he is the European record holder here in the ISF with a 152 and a half kilo dip, and he's preparing to break it right now. Okay. He's my good friend.
That's super interesting. Okay. I like that. And it, again, it shows strength is a skill.
And, yes.
And in the end, of course, you are strong, your muscles are strong, and then now you have to learn to use that strength in certain movements. And sometimes you have like you already strong muscles, like maybe from the bench press, already strong triceps, already strong chest and all that stuff. And you just have now to learn to bring that into the dip and vice versa, like having a strong dip going into the bench. I mean, I have seen you benching close to 200.
Yes, I benched 190 in a little bit of a fatigued state after a competition, just for fun, with no technique and no skill of that movement, because the last time I actually trained bench seriously was in 2013. So I guess you could say that with no experience at all, and I benched 190. And Dmitry, who is an expert bench presser, told that with only technical adjustments, I can get to 120, like 220 plus in bench. Yeah. Just from dips without actually benching.
Yeah. So this is again just something, when you get strong, you can do a lot of stuff. You just have now maybe to learn a little bit of the technique, and this is it.
Yes. If you're strong, you're strong.
I love that. For the dips, what are your most favorite tips for the dips?
Keep like the dip for me is a lot in the legs. So keep your legs straight, keep them locked, keep them centered, and keep them vertical. Vertical legs make the dip. If you learn to control your legs, then you are like 70% there. And this thing we talked about with lowering plates, it also, beside moving the center of mass injure dip lower to stabilize you. It also allows you to lock your legs in place much better and easier.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what it's done for. Learn to bring your legs down in a straight line and bring them up without the legs going backwards, because you can see in a lot of strong athletes that didn't work on their technique quite well, that they usually like, they go down well, like this. And on the way up, they start like their legs started going back, the weight started going back as well. And their like ascent in the shoulder girdle is stuttered by this. And they have like this dead point in the dip, and then they overcome or they don't, but it makes the dip a lot harder. And if you optimize the like the bar path, the weight path in the dip, it makes the rep a lot easier and smoother.
Yeah.
So the dip for me is in the legs.
Yeah.
You also need to learn the proper shoulder positioning, but it was discussed quite well in the dip talk by you and Dennis.
Yeah.
So basically say no to retracted dips together. Keep
no to retracted bit, dips. Yeah. So what would you say, how much lean is the best lean in a dip?
I think your body needs to be around 45 degrees leaned, like at the 90 degree angle, not more, because if you go too horizontal, you make things harder for yourself.
Yeah.
And also this dip can consider to be cheating because like you lean too much, but 45 degrees, I think that's quite balanced.
Yeah, yeah. I would never tell someone, okay, this is the right degree for you, but somewhere in that range is pretty much what you see with the best dippers.
And it, you know, it's like with elbows in and balls out. Elbows out, you can't really give a precise cue for everyone at the same time because it's like the personal position. Same with the lean in the dips. Some people have like a shorter torso, so they have to lean a little bit more into the dip. Some people have a long torso, so they are fine with staying a little bit more upright. But like find which works for you, but stick to the main cues.
Absolutely.
That's my position.
I'm completely with you at that point. Completely. Because that's something I know that especially in more into the Eastern Europe side, like Russia and all that, there's also a group of people who tells you you're not allowed to lean forward at all.
Yes, the dip haters, I call them. I also call them idiots. You know?
I would say in most cases, those people didn't understand biomechanics.
Yes, and the most also in the most cases, these people have a weak dip.
That's true. But when you don't lean forward, you don't use your chest. It's just
yes, crazy. and also leaning forward allows you to protect your shoulders from overextending.
Oh, yeah,
and that's a big part. Like that's a big thing in dip and heavy, because if you lift heavy, your technique must be safe and injury proof. And like having a retracted dip with a vertical body and your elbows behind you, like all the way, it's just not injury proof. And a lot of people actually got injured on this type of form. Even Adam Rowe got his chest torn on a 140 vertical dip.
Yeah.
So even legends are not safe from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm completely with you at that point. I would say a part of leaning forward is very, very important at that point. And it also is because when you look at it from the biomechanical way, the way you have to position your shoulder blades in a completely vertical pushing movement in the dip, definitely lead to a very shitty position of the shoulder blades, which definitely there's no other way than leading to injury. Except for maybe some people who are just lucky at that point. But when you look at it, it's just not a very safe and stable position for the shoulder blades and especially for the rotator cuff at all.
Yes, and it can lead to shoulder impingement and then you're done.
Yeah, That's it. Because people will lose depression. There's no way you don't lose it. Because you have to lean forward to keep the depression. And depression is that what keeps you healthy at that point. How important do you think is protraction?
It's also really important to keep the tension in your dip. Because like the dip is about legs, but it's also about the full body tension that you can produce and hold during the, at least during the negative and the 90 degree phase. Because if you lose your tension, your body sags and turns it to a vertical dip, and you lose the rep.
Yeah.
So this bit of protraction actually allows you to have a solid, strong structure in your shoulders, which allows you to control the repetition, especially during the descent and the 90 degree angle. And to strengthen that specifically, to strengthen that position, to understand it better, pause dips are a great exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my go-to variation in the dips.
Absolutely. Like
I do only dips and pause dips. Pause dips are a golden exercise, which I recommend to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you see the, I would say it's like a French style of dipping. When they open up the chest pretty much, how do you see that?
Like from what I saw in the recent videos from the French guys, they all have quite solid dip techniques. So I haven't seen them opening up that much, but I guess they open up on the way up
when yeah.
they push up. Well, I don't really like opening up too much. I think that neutral position of the chest is fine and optimal.
Yeah.
Neutral, but opening up excessively is not the best way to do it. But as long as you are strong and a little bit protracted and keeping tension in at the 90 degree angle, then if you open up a little bit too much on the ascent, then it is mostly fine.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not like perfectly optimal, but it can be fine.
When there is a day when you just don't feel that safe with the shoulder girdle, do you still go for heavy weights or how do you handle that? Because I have experienced that very often that when I'm not completely safe with my complete shoulder girdle and all the stuff around my scapula, dip sessions get pretty shit. How do you handle that?
I have a plan. I execute it.
You always go completely yes. into it?
Yes, I do.
Never skip a session or maybe put it on the next day because you feel
like
you wasted?
I can alter a session only if I physically fail it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If I have the strength to complete it, I complete it. Yeah. I have a plan, I stick to it. This yeah. is my position on that. And it works for me because I found that with flexible auto-regulating plans, I usually lose strength. But if I push myself mm-hmm. through these shitty sessions, shitty days, and I force myself to show the result, then the results start progressing. Mm-hmm. This is how I do it. This is how it works for me. Some people benefit more from the auto-regulation.
Yeah.
But I don't. I just don't. This is my personal thing that it doesn't really work for me.
Yeah. How often do you deload, actually?
Well, I usually try to make my plan as manageable as possible, but usually deloads come in very handy after something like 4 weeks of medium intensity training. And when I'm in high intensity phases or peaking, or these periods when I one rep max often, I usually do one heavy week and one deload week. So alternating.
Oh,
so one overreaching week. Like if you have an overreaching week, you have to follow that with the deload. And usually this extreme style of session, extreme style of training, I do that to peak my one reps and I alternate like extreme load weeks with deload weeks. So every second week is a deload week. In this period.
How long do you keep these phases?
Well, it works best for around 3 cycles, so 6 weeks.
Okay.
And then I switch back to my normal training style.
That's also super interesting. I've never heard of that. That's super interesting. But this is actually because you can see stuff like that very often from, I would say, Eastern Europe and Russian type of training, and I'm coming from a Western Europe, which is very often very different to these programming and periodization style, which is why I always like that, because it's very hard to get into the literature of that stuff, because it's all in Russian and I don't speak Russian. So I just can't read it.
Well, I actually base most of my programming on the Texas method style training.
Yeah.
And like, if you heard about the Metcalf program, I also use that, like the cyclic approach.
Super like you can. And they are based from some Russian stuff that, so far as I know.
Well, maybe, I don't know.
I think that's coming from the 70s, somewhere there. I have to look it up, but that something is coming up from there. That's super, super interesting. All right, I like that. Okay, I think we have a lot of stuff covered in that episode. Do you have some more stuff that you definitely need to put in here for the dips?
For the dips, basically, like the main tip I would have for the dips is don't listen to the idiots from the fitness industry, because fitness industry tries to promote dips like in very weird ways, like retracted chest, like focus on the chest, focus on the triceps. They never see the dip as a basic exercise. And if you want to get a great dip, stop learning this bullshit from fitness influencers and start learning from actual street lifters and people who know shit about dips.
Yeah.
Like, who do dips?
Now we're back to shitty connection. I love it. Yeah, your sound is off too. I think you need to reconnect again. Now we have to wait a little. Until he reconnects
from influence, because there is a lot of misinformation, and I think we're stuck again.
Yeah. Okay. We have the sound back, but the picture is still fucked up.
Connection.
I think you need to reconnect it. Oh yes. Now let's see. Now I think it's getting better now. Yeah
we're back.
All right. Yeah. For the listeners, we are back. All right. So no fitness influencers.
Yes.
All right. Let's go into this last questions that I have. What are your plans for the future?
Well, right now, I am resting from heavy dips a little because I really burned myself out with trying to cross that 195 kilo boundary, but I just didn't manage to do it. And right now I am prioritizing chin-ups a little while building up the basis for the future heavy dipping. And when the basis is ready, I will switch focus again and go for the 200 kilo dip seriously. Mm-hmm. I want to hit a 160 4x4 before going for the 200, because according to calculations, 160 4x4 will give me an estimated one rep max of 205 kilo dip.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds very good. So 200 in the dip, and as you already said, you want to have the locked 120 chin.
Yes, and it will be perfect, but it will require a lot of work.
Yeah. Do you have any very big goals in your mind that you want to reach in the very far future?
Well, I don't know. I consider going on roids and trying to break through the 170 kilogram on pulls.
Wait, that would be completely crazy. And at that point, I have to say, I would love to see it, actually. I wouldn't love to see you being on roids, because that's for health reasons, because I want you to be healthy. But on the other hand, that would be something that would be so crazy to what degree we can push the human body, that it would be so interesting that I'm really curious.
Well, actually, if I ever do it, I will, like, the first thing is that I will be completely open about it. So like, this is my principle. Like, you have to be open about use, whether you do it or not. If I do it, I'll like be completely open about it. And that also will, like, it will shatter all the doubts that come through people's minds right now. Because if I say like, I'm going on juice, and then my dip, like I had 30 kilos in 2 months, then it will be obvious that before that I was a natural.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the second part is, if I ever do it, I will do it under a control, under control of an expert, to not fuck up my health.
Yeah.
With all the blood tests, hormone testing, everything.
Yeah.
Because that, the health will be my priority in that case.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, right now it's still a little bit too early to talk about this, because I'm still planning to carry on with my natural strength.
Yeah.
But I consider this as an option.
Okay.
And I think it will be very interesting to find out where the actual limits can lie.
Yeah. But I'm also very interested where you're going to push this for the maybe like next 4 years or something, until you're 25 or something, where we can actually see you pushing the limits, because that's what you're doing right now. And this is why I have you here, because this is so super interesting what you're doing actually. And I think we have to end the podcast with the most important question ever. Will you ever start squatting?
Yes. At some point I will. Because I want to compete in Europe at some point, and I want to put up a decent total anyway. And in the future, actually, this is like to the point of even more distant goals than dominating in the pull-up and dip. After I dominate, I want to become a more well-rounded athlete, as you promote. Yeah. So I want to bring up the weak points after that. So squatting, deadlifts, bench press, and all other basic lifts. So after I reach my goals in pull-ups and dips, I want to like widen my base and like get to know more lifts. Because like at some point, pulling and dipping will just get obsolete for me.
Yeah.
When I say my last word in these, I will switch to a more like diverse approach. But right now I'm specialized because I need to break the limits.
Love to see that. I really love to see that. Really looking forward to this. Maybe a long journey, but we have the time. We have the time. Love that.
So, yes, and I still have the time, because I'm only 21. I have the time of my life.
Yes,
absolutely. Before me.
So for all the listeners, if they want to contact you, I think you're also selling some programs. Where can they reach out to you?
On Instagram.
Easily, just Matthew Slatt.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, just my main Instagram profile.
That's super duper well. All right. Would you say there's someone, what kind of people should make your programs? Anyone or maybe some special people?
Well, my programs are for people who are into specialized weighted calisthenics, just like me, and they are the representation of my approach to training.
Yeah.
So if you want to try my approach, if you want to try how I train, then this program is for you.
Perfect. Love to hear that. All right. And for you listeners, if you liked having Matthew on the show and you want him back, let us know. Shoot us some messages to the Strength and Skills podcast. Please do us the favor, take this episode, share it on your social media, because this is what we need to be a little bit more for the community at that point and pushing the limits. And yeah, tag the Strength and Skills podcast, tag me, Nick_Tibu, and of course, tag the legend himself, Matthew Slatt. Matthew, thank you so much for being here. It was a pleasure and I had so much fun with you.
Well, thanks to you, it's been possible. So thanks, Nick. I enjoyed that podcast.
I loved it. So I see you soon. And you guys, make sure to share this one on the social media. And
yes, do it.
Learn a lot.
Or you won't. Yes, do it or you won't get PRs on your dips.
Goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye, everyone.